सुखिनः।
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. The station that makes you feel good.
I'm your host, Dr. Vijay Murthy. I'm with Alison Astle-Smith, who is an osteopath who uses nutritional approaches to help people with all different kinds of health issues. And recently, Alison has lost 20 pounds of fat. I'm not talking about weight loss, but 20 pounds of fat over the last 6 months. So I'm interested to talk to Alison about how Alison achieved this goal and what people should be looking at, especially, you know, we are now in the post-Christmas New Year period. So I'm really keen to learn from Alison her method of achieving fat loss. Hi, Alison.
Hello, Vijay.
Thank you so much for being on my show, Unlock Your Health. You have been an osteopath for the last 35 years.
That's correct, I have.
But your special interest is in nutrition.
That's right.
And when I first met you, Alison, I was in one of your workshops and you were talking about gluten and gliadin sensitivity. But then you also mentioned about this new regime that you have been using for achieving fat loss.
Yes, indeed.
Something that really stuck to my mind. Although I'm a doctor, I've never kind of looked at fat as white fat and brown fat. To be honest, I thought, oh, that's being racist. But tell me that you do believe that there is something called brown fat.
Yes, indeed, there is. There's actually two forms of fat cell. There's white fat cells and brown fat cells. And then there's the in-betweeny fat cells called bright or beige fat cells. They're slightly different in how they look. So a white fat cell is a globule of fat in the fat cell, and a brown fat cell is little globules of fat with lots of mitochondria. And these little mitochondria are all full of iron, and that's what makes them appear brown. So that's your brown fat cell. Now,
so what's the importance of understanding white fat cells and brown fat cells if we are looking at fat loss?
White fat cells and white fat are designed to keep us warm and act as a fuel in times of famine. Whereas the brown fat cells, which always used to be believed to only be present in babies and small mammals, they are able to generate heat. And in so doing, they utilize a lot of energy. So the more brown fat we have, the more fat loss is possible.
That's really
more metabolically active.
That's really interesting, Alison, because, you know, as we know, people can lose weight with crash diets easily, you know, especially if you have never dieted and you start dieting, within about 2 weeks you see a huge improvement and then it slows down. Even if you carry on, within few months you will continue to lose weight, but it is not a guarantee that you might lose fat, particularly in stubborn areas. And that relates to what you have exactly been saying, is that if it is white fat, evolution wise that is actually for rainy days, or, you know, it is for storage of energy.
For storage in times of famine, that's correct.
Whereas babies, you know, who look so cute when they're babies, obviously, and have this fat, they lose it as they grow. And that's because that's a different kind of fat. This is exactly what you have developed your regime on. How to actually convert your white fat to brown fat so you can actually get rid of stubborn fat.
Indeed.
Tell me a little bit about mitochondria, because not all of our listeners may be nutritionists like yourself or me. So what's the importance of mitochondria in energy conversion?
The importance of the mitochondria is to, in terms of brown fat cells, is to unlock the energy of the is to use the ATP.
Okay, so ATP is adenosine triphosphate, which is the energy source. You know, with ATP, we are going to derive energy for every function in our body. Even if you are sleeping, our body needs energy, and ATP is very important.
Indeed, and in the brown fat cells, they're specialized to uncouple this energy, this ATP.
So what is meant by uncoupling?
To release the energy, so, and it's released as heat.
It's released as heat. So in white fat, energy is stored.
Energy is stored in the fat cell, in the fat, in the triglycerides, or the fat, big fat globule within the fat cell.
Yes. And then it doesn't necessarily get released unless there is an extreme trigger.
Indeed.
Whereas in brown fat cells, what you are saying is that if you do the right things, even if there is not an extreme trigger, it readily gets converted.
Indeed. It gets converted into heat, and it's much more metabolically active, so it burns more energy, which will then allow more energy to be burnt from the rest of the fat cells, from the white fat cells.
Okay, so this is obviously going to raise certain questions amongst listeners and myself. How do I know whether I have more white fat or brown fat?
You actually don't know whether you've got more white fat than brown fat, because you can't see the weight from brown fat. The brown fat is located in the deep areas of the neck, basically to keep the certain arteries, the carotid arteries, certain artery, deep arteries within the neck, warm. And it's also located just above the kidneys. So it's very important for maintaining life in the event of exposure to cold.
Okay.
So that's the small areas, and there is only a small amount of brown fat in the body.
But how do you then convert, you know, the stubborn white fat, which usually is the one that sits around the waist? Mm-hmm. As we know, once we hit 30 or 40, our metabolic rate goes down by about 2% every decade. And, you know, you may have to exercise more. You might be eating the right thing. You might be eating less. Because I know, Alison, that when I hit 30, I started to notice putting on more fat around my waist. Mm-hmm. I was physically active, but then nutrition-wise, I was drawn to more caloric-deficient diet, which really made me lose muscles but not lose the fat. And I had to increase my physical activity, yet not achieving the result I wanted. So how do we then, if we only have a small amount of brown fat, how can we then actually make a white fat function like brown fat?
Okay, the white fat cells can actually be converted into these in-betweeners called beige or bright cells. And likewise, the brown fat cells can also be converted into the beige or bright cells. The way to stimulate the conversion into the bright cells is, first of all, cold. That's the main stimulus. And you can place cold around areas of the brown fat to stimulate the more brown fat to be produced as well. However, it really is very cold, and it's not very pleasant. Mm-hmm. So
give me an example. For instance, you know, there is this now, this whole concept of cryosculpting, which is by exposing adipose tissue, which is a subcutaneous fat, to extreme low temperatures, where actually the fat tissue dies And then later it is excreted from the body, and then there's a permanent loss of fat up to about 25 to 30% in these areas.
That's true. They freeze the fat to -7 degrees, which is just enough to kill the fat cells. The actual amount of fat loss is quite small from the death of these fat cells. But we're not talking, when you're talking about stimulating brown fat, you're not talking about killing off fat cells. The problem with fat cells is if you kill them, the fat within the cell is released into the bloodstream, and it may well deposit somewhere else as well if you don't change your dietary habits.
Mm-hmm.
So when we talk about cold stimulus, we are just talking about cold on the surface of the areas where the brown fat is to stimulate that, and also on surfaces of subcutaneous areas as well, which will stimulate a change into brown fats.
Or which
brown
are
fat
those
cells.
Areas? You said that brown fat is above the kidneys
and next to the carotid arteries and the
which is in the neck,
correct, and the sympathetic chain, which is also in the neck.
Mm-hmm.
As part of the nervous system.
And how is it done? You know, how do you expose
these areas
to?
It's not very fun, this one. If you're going to use cold, you can actually use ice packs on the area to stimulate it. So you can actually buy cold vests and wear those, but it's not very fun. That there are actually much kinder ways of doing of stimulating brown fat, and there are certain things which will do that, and that is capsicum is well documented to change the fat. Something called ursolic acid, which is derived from either apple skins or from rosemary. And epigallocatechin, which is found in green tea. It's the active component of green tea. All those three supplements will stimulate the increase of brown fat and the conversion from white fat to brown fat.
So let me summarize. So it's capsicum?
Capsicum, something called capsicum fruit essence.
Mm-hmm.
Is the one.
Green tea,
although you'd have to drink an awful lot of green tea.
So you would need green tea extract.
Green tea extract. Mm-hmm. And ursolic acid, which is derived from either rosemary,
mm-hmm,
or from the apple, the skin of green apples.
So, you know, if you're having organic green apples or having lots of rosemary tea or green tea, you might benefit.
Absolutely.
To an extent, but if you really want to achieve true fat loss, if you have
stimulation
to produce more heat,
yes,
to enable the fat to be engaged in producing, mm-hmm, energy, then you would have to have the extracts.
Yes, indeed.
And that's because of the ingredient called ursolic acid, which is in rosemary and green apples.
Yes.
And what's the content in green tea that does it?
It's called epigallocatechin.
Epigallocatechin.
Yes, catechin.
Uh-huh, okay. So epigallocatechin.
That's right.
And the ones that are found in apple and
ursolic acid, which is found
rosemary,
in rosemary and
capsicum. What
and
is that?
Capsicum fruit essence. Capsicum, it's hot peppers, but capsicum fruit essence is the particular one which stimulates the brown fat.
Mm-hmm. And so, do you have to take a particular supplement that may contain these ingredients to achieve fat loss?
It's those three supplements, which is where I've had success with my own patients with fat loss.
Mm-hmm.
Supplement as ursolic acid, green tea,
capsicum, green tea extract, and the apple.
Ursolic acid.
Rosemary and okay.
Mm-hmm.
So you use that in combination with something?
That in itself will stimulate. It works by stimulating adrenaline, which then works on the brown fat cell to A, to produce more brown fat cells, but B, to stimulate the heat production, which is what's actually using up more of your energy.
Okay, so what you're saying is these ingredients, they help in activating the adrenals?
They actually stimulate adrenaline.
Okay.
And the adrenaline then works on the fat cell itself.
Okay, let's stay with this thought for a second. Adrenaline, which we know is the flight or fight hormone, that's there for actually basically for a protective function,
mm-hmm.
to protect us against emergencies, like to have an immediate reflex. For instance, when evolution-wise, if you were attacked by a lion,
mm-hmm.
then that you would have to have the instinct to immediately climb up the tree so that you are not eaten up by the lion. So you have this adrenaline. So it's the fear and the flight or fight kind of hormone.
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes if you are constantly stimulated or if you are constantly under stress, you can become adrenaline exhausted. So what is the difference between what these ingredients do on adrenaline to the one that we don't want, which is adrenaline overstimulation or exhaustion?
So it works as a much more localized effect with the adrenaline, working specifically on the brown fat cells rather than a more systemic effect with the adrenals, and which would end up with an exhaustion, as you just mentioned. But interestingly, that you actually mentioned stress effect there, because stress, as we know, will produce a long-term release of cortisol, which is always associated with fat gain. So stress, again, is an important part of, or handling stress is an important part of handling weight loss, fat loss.
Okay, so we have something which helps in increasing the metabolism.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And is there anything else that one would need to know for mobilizing fat, as opposed to just losing weight? Because losing muscle mass is not a good thing. It is actually going to further lower one's metabolism.
It's important to include in your regime a small amount of exercise. And the exercise is high intensity interval training and super slow fiber training. The high intensity interval training specifically stimulates short, sharp bursts of adrenaline,
mm-hmm.
rather than stressing continual adrenaline release as you would see in a long distance runner.
Yes, that's a fantastic point that you just mentioned, Alison, is, you know, when you are stimulating the adrenaline, it has to be for a shorter period of
mm-hmm.
time, and then it has to be followed by the relaxation effect.
Indeed.
So it is stimulation and relaxation that's purposeful can actually help in increasing one's metabolism. Otherwise, it can result in breaking down the muscles or breaking down the tissues and resulting not in fat loss, but actually resulting in degenerative changes.
Mm-hmm.
So this high intensity interval training, which often is called HIIT, you can do it in many different ways. Like if you have a nice park, you could just run or sprint for about 60 seconds to your capacity and then slow down for a few seconds or even a minute or two, but don't let your heart rate come to normal. Completely, but even when you are still feeling that your heart rate is still a bit higher, then again sprint. So if you do 1 minute of sprinting, 2 minutes of jogging, 1 minute of sprinting. So this is how you can actually support your increased metabolic rate without actually resulting in exhaustion or having negative effects of adrenaline stimulation. That's what you're saying.
Indeed. In fact, the short, sharp bursts of adrenaline will also stimulate the brown fat that we just talked about.
So internally you can take these, and through physical activity you mm-hmm. can achieve this. So imagine what we are here looking at, Alison, is we are not looking at caloric deficiency or producing a caloric deficient state. We are really looking at the physiological ways, or we are looking at enabling our physiological mechanism to increase metabolism. And tell me about this slow exercise.
Super slow fiber. It really is super, super slow, and there's no stress on the joints at all. So if you were to, it has the same effect as HIIT exercise, but if you were to take weights of, say, three pounds, and very, very, very slowly take the weights in your hands so that you're using your biceps muscle to the count of, and I'll just run it so you realise how slow it is, one and two and so on, and right the way up to practically till the muscles meet, and then again going back down again. Super, super, super slow, and you will find that you actually can't get beyond about 10 repetitions because of the you're using certain fibers in the muscle.
That's really very slow.
It's very, very slow.
So,
and it can be performed by anybody, by children, by elderly people.
So this is not going to bulk your muscles?
No, this won't bulk it. It will tone them, but it won't bulk them. But it will have the same effect as the high-intensity interval training, so far as we're concerned with the fat. The other thing with both high-intensity interval training and the super slow is that it stimulates other hormones which are associated with fat loss. There's one called irisin, which is released under when you exercise, and there's another one called adiponectin, which is it's a good hormone. You want lots of adiponectin to aid fat loss.
Okay, so I'll come back to adiponectin and irisin, the two hormones that many of our listeners may not be very familiar with. With slow exercise, generally for weight loss, if you're not wanting the anabolic effect of multiplying your muscle fibers but toning, you use lower weights or lower weights and more repetitions.
But very slow.
Yeah. However, super slow is not about repetition. This is using very low weights. It could be as low as, say, 1 kg.
It depends. How much you can handle. If you can easily do 10 repetitions of 1 kg, then that's not heavy enough. You would need to increase it to 2 kg and then try the 10 repetitions very slowly.
And is it just the biceps curls?
You can use any muscle at all. So you could, if you've got weights that you can wrap around the ankles, mm-hmm. You can use the hamstrings and use the legs as well.
Can you do squats, slow squats?
Yes, you can. You can use any muscle groups.
So basically we are looking at very slow contraction of muscles under some tension. To create the tension, you are using very low weights.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
That's right. You don't even need to use the weights.
You can do it slowly.
If you do it super slowly.
So you can just make it a very functional exercise where not using weights, and so you don't have any dangers of injury. And that sounds fantastic. Now, coming back to, do you believe that fat is an endocrine organ? Fat is hormones.
It is, and fat loss is about having imbalance within that the hormones that the fat produces. The fat will actually produce over 400 what are called adipokines, which are chemicals or in some cases hormones. So it functions as an endocrine organ.
So you're not talking about, you know, the general kind of understanding that we have from a medical perspective, that if somebody's thyroids are slow, which is called hypothyroidism, then that they'll have a greater chance of gaining fat or difficulty in losing fat.
Mm-hmm.
So you're not just talking about thyroxine from thyroid gland. You're actually saying that fat itself...
Fat itself functions as an endocrine gland.
Endocrine gland.
Yes.
And then you mentioned two hormones, irisin.
There's lots of hormones that are concerned with fat...
loss
or and fat balance, really.
Yeah.
The main one, the one that's mostly produced by fat cells is actually leptin.
Yeah.
Leptin is the hormone that the fat cell produces, which is then read by the brain, and the message it sends is, we're full up, stop feeding us, don't eat anymore, we've got plenty for the famine. The problem comes when...
So leptin increases when you're full.
It does. Once you get...
Satisfied. Yeah.
Although the satisfaction one is actually another hormone.
Yes, called, yeah.
Ghrelin. Ghrelin is actually the hunger hormone.
Hunger hormone, yes.
But the leptin is released by the fat cell. It's one of these hormones which is released by the fat cell. And... it is then read by the brain, and the message it's sending is, we're full up, we've got lots of fat, we've had enough, stop eating. The problem is...
the leptin can go down in some people.
The problem is when you become leptin resistant.
Like insulin resistance.
Just like insulin resistance. And in fact, leptin resistance always precedes insulin resistance, usually by a number of years.
So, okay, let me just pause for a second because this is interesting. See, we know that actually when there is insulin resistance for about 10 years or so, it can lead to diabetes.
Mm-hmm.
What you're saying is even before insulin resistance, there can be leptin resistance.
Yes, indeed.
And this leptin resistance can impact negatively on one's metabolism.
Yes.
But, you know, quickly, you know, for... I'm a very impatient listener myself. So how can I change my leptin resistance?
Basically, you stop eating refined carbohydrates and sugars. That's the simplest way to start to normalize your fat cell function.
So I have to stop eating bread?
I'm afraid so. even whole wheat bread has a substance in it called amylopectin, which is actually takes the blood sugar very high very quickly. Even though it takes a little more time to digest, it contains this compound. But
what about oats?
Oats are a more slow-release carb, but if we're going to be talking about normalizing fat function... for a period of time, you need to keep your carb level down to about 5% for this to work.
5%?
5%. It's quite low. So the system that has worked with my patients is and for myself is 5% complex carbs, not refined carbs, up to 75% of good fats, that's saturated fats and good oils like omega-3 oils and olive oil and so on, coconut oil,
mm-hmm.
Up to 20% or so of protein, and good clean proteins.
Okay, so let's just get this right. So 5% of carbohydrate.
Complex carbohydrate.
So we are not talking about 5 grams. We are talking about 5% of your total intake.
Yes.
Yeah. So give me an example for someone like me who is 75 kilograms. and 175 centimeters tall male. Possibly, say, because I'm physically active, if my daily requirement of energy is around, say, 2,500 kilocalories, how much of that should come from carbohydrates if it is 5%?
Okay. It's not...
Approximate. You know, you don't have to use a calculator because, you know, it's not all about calorie counting, but it's knowing.
It's not about calorie counting, yeah. In fact. And in fact, calories have different...
Effects. Yes.
The general, and there is no, there's not a particular restriction in the amount that you can eat. You eat to your satisfaction, in mm-hmm. fact. But in terms of carbohydrate, how much, I would say the amount of carbohydrate for anybody is that you will find in your vegetables that you, vegetables, maybe even root vegetables.
What kind of vegetables are we looking at?
Predominantly green vegetables.
Like broccoli,
yeah.
Green beans, can be spinach, yes. Kale,
yeah.
It can be courgettes.
Yes.
And then...
Really, you can have as much of that as you wish.
Yeah. Yeah. What about peppers?
Peppers are certainly very beneficial.
Yeah. And so what about the... don't eat vegetables. Which are they?
They're more the root vegetables, like the sugary vegetables.
Like sweet potato.
Sweet potato. It actually is quite high in carbohydrate, even though it's a complex carbohydrate, slow release.
Okay.
If you're looking for fat loss, you should reduce your
sweet potato as well.
Certainly potato.
Yes.
In itself, because yeah. that has a very high glycemic index.
So no fries.
I'm afraid not, Vijay, I'm afraid not.
Okay. And what about beetroot?
Beetroot is actually quite high in sugar.
And carrots?
And so are carrots.
What about peas?
You can have a few peas, mm-hmm. just a handful of peas, but again, they're quite high.
Aubergine?
Aubergine is fine.
Aubergine is fine. And
so ratatouille, if you make a ratatouille, that's very good.
Yeah. Parsnips?
Parsnips, again, are quite high.
Okay. And what about beetroot?
Beetroot, we've mentioned, and it's quite high in sugar.
Okay. So all root vegetables...
While you're on this, on a fat loss program, you should at least restrict your root vegetables.
And how long is this fat loss program for?
Until your body normalizes, you will lose weight on this. And once it reaches its own level where you feel comfortable within that, mm-hmm. then it doesn't mean you go back on to all your refined carbs, but you can start introducing more
yes.
carbs like root vegetables and so on.
So how will you know that you are losing fat?
The fat actually changes consistency. People have found that their muscle tone, especially when you increase the HIIT exercise, starts to improve. But the one comment that my patients have said is that their fat has felt squidgy. It begins to alter its consistency. It's no longer
compact,
and yeah. it begins to loosen.
Now, this is a very, very useful point, Alison, because when I was in my 20s, that's the first time I went to the gym. And my personal trainer, he just felt, the subcutaneous mm-hmm. fat. Even in my 20s, I had quite a bit of fat around my waist. And then I asked, why are you, what can you make out? And he said, basically, if it is too tight, if it's very compact,
mm-hmm.
you will have greater difficulty, you will need longer mm-hmm. time. But if it is not that kind of compacted, not necessarily, the hanging kind of fat, but if it's not too, it's a consistency thing that you're talking about. So you notice a change in that.
Yeah, absolutely. People notice a change in that. It's actually as well, because The fat in a fat globule or fat cell is made up of these things called triglycerides, mm-hmm. Which are basically different lengths, chains of fats. And the more compact or lardy your fat is, the longer the chain of the fat in the triglyceride, which is in the fat cell. And those take a lot longer to burn. To metabolize.
So the long chain triglycerides, they take longer to burn.
Yes.
People do understand triglycerides because if you ever had a blood test for your cholesterol, yeah. then you will be getting a mm-hmm. measurement of your total triglycerides.
Well, your fat globule in your fat cell is made up of hundreds of these triglycerides, and they're all of different lengths.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the longer chain ones that take much longer to burn, and the ones that have often been there the longest as well. But talking about your waistline there, it's important to remember the three sorts of fat.
Yes.
Visceral fat,
yeah.
The subcutaneous that we've spoken about, and intramuscular fat as well.
Okay. So visceral fat is the fat that's around the waist where most of the digestive organs are.
It's the fat that surrounds all your digestive organs and your liver and your heart. And it's also a fat apron, which is just underneath the abdominal wall.
Yes.
And these fat cells are much smaller, and these are the dangerous fat cells because they make lots of inflammatory chemicals.
Yeah, that's why, you know, like the typical figure of thin arms and thin legs and a pot belly is actually health-wise a dangerous sign, because visceral fat can actually affect the metabolic processes more negatively than having more subcutaneous fat, which is just underneath the skin.
Absolutely. We actually need that subcutaneous fat, especially females. They need it for as part of the reproduction. Without enough fat, then a female won't reproduce.
Yeah.
But the other important...
the intramuscular fat. What about the intramuscular
one
fat?
One is intramuscular fat, in fact. That's if you have a piece of meat or, let's say, a steak, and the marbled effect within that steak is the intramuscular fat. It's as it sounds. It's between muscle fibres, bits of fat between muscle fibres. But the important... takeaway fact here is that the cells which would normally become muscle cells, if you don't have enough vitamin D in your either in your diet or you've made enough vitamin D through the summer months from the sunlight, if you don't have enough vitamin D, then these cells which would have become muscle cells actually become fat cells instead.
Right.
So you can, and all vitamin D is one of the most important nutrients for to aid fat loss.
So in another way to visualize, so if you're visualizing muscle fat, like a layered cake.
Yes, that's a good way to put it.
So if you don't have enough vitamin D, then you've got more fat and thinner layers of muscle.
Yes.
But if you have good amounts of vitamin D, then in this sandwich, you have got more muscle layers and thinner layers of fat.
This is one of the reasons that meat can be fatty meat that's grown indoors. Mm-hmm. Animals that are indoors, they're not exposed to the sunlight, that therefore they don't make the vitamin D, so therefore they have more fat within the muscle. It's
exactly.
Not converted into
vitamin
D.
That's the difference between eating grass-fed meat to the ones which are, you know, done the other way. So coming back to, you know, so are you saying that by having more vitamin D or good amounts of vitamin D and capsicum green tea extract, by exercising you can actually increase your leptin sensitivity?
Yes, you can.
Yeah. What are the other ways to increase your leptin sensitivity?
Again, you alter your diet. Diet is a big part of it. So you cut your sugars down and your refined carbs. But there's another important nutrient, and that's your omega-3s.
Mm-hmm.
And that can be taken in oily fish or as supplements, or in cases of vegetarian, there's a wonderful source of omega-3, or the what's converted to omega-3. Flaxseed is very good, but there's actually a better one than that, and it's called Sacha Inky Oil.
Oh, Sacha, that's a Peruvian...
It's a nut. It comes from a Peruvian nut.
Yes.
Along the Amazon.
Yeah. So what's the difference between, you know, omega-3, I mean, in flaxseed oil? Because a lot of my listeners are also vegans and vegetarian, because I cater to all types of people. So I know that if you are a vegan or vegetarian, actually the ability for the body to convert omegas in flaxseed oil to DHA, which is what we want ultimately, is higher. But then you would have to eat a lot of flaxseed. But what you're saying is with Sacha Inky oil,
You still need to eat quite a lot of the Sacha Inky oil. A teaspoon of Sacha Inky oil is equivalent in terms of an omega-3 conversion to 3 capsules of omega-3.
Okay.
So it's a teaspoon of oil is not a huge amount, but it's very efficient, because it's up to 56 to 58% of it is an omega-3. It's slightly lower with flaxseed and. There's always the issue with flaxseed with males. I don't give flaxseed to male patients.
Why? Why is that?
Because of the issue with prostate. There was some research done some time ago that linked flaxseed oil with prostate problems.
So in them you would suggest Sacha Inky oil, or if they're not vegetarian or
omega-3.
Vegan, they can have omega-3s. Yes. I'm going to come back to the blind spots of omega-3 in a second. But before that, you know, you have been talking about fat loss, and you have been suggesting all these fats. So how does consuming fat going to actually reduce fat?
Okay. When we create energy, there's two ways of creating energy. You can create it from sugars, and you can become a carb burner, or you can create energy from fat. And it's a different pathway. And the pathway where you make energy from fat, the byproduct of this is something called ketones. And you run all your, you can run your brain, you can run all your energy pathways on ketones, in fact. If you start...
Okay, so what you're saying is if we can actually activate the production of ketones instead of being dependent on glucose, which seems to be one of the sources, if we go on to the alternative, which is ketones, then we are actually changing our hormonal functions and our metabolism to enable our body to actually use fat. And to make our body more ketonic, you would have to really reduce the carbohydrates, particularly the refined carbohydrates, and increase the amount of fat. And also it's very important, Alison, what you're saying is, this is not about high protein and low carb. This is actually high fat.
Yes.
So sometimes those who believe that they are, you know, mobilizing their ketones, if they actually also go on a high protein, it actually results in more inflammatory processes than resulting in fat loss.
Absolutely.
Would you agree with
that? Yes, I would totally agree with that. There's a quick or a faster way. Because we're full of sugar anyway all the time, in order to stimulate or get faster into this ability to produce energy from ketones, it's fasting. So if the first 24 hours, if you fast for 24 hours, you're emptying your blood of sugar. Mm-hmm. In the second 24 hours, you're emptying your liver and your muscles of stored sugar in a form called glycogen. Mm-hmm. And then after that, you start to burn your fat. The body has no choice but to start burning, utilizing your own fat.
That's also a very important point, because when you do certain kinds of high protein, low carb diet, which in the long run may not be that good because it actually results in cravings, even though for about 2 months it may be the best thing. But if you do it as a lifestyle, it actually results in craving for sugars. What I wanted to say is, if you go on a high protein and low carb, for the body to reach ketonic stage takes longer. But if you start with fasting, as you say, you're going to achieve a ketonic state quicker. So, in fact, you know, depending on your fitness and your metabolism, mm-hmm. it can be anywhere between 24 hours and 72. Or I would recommend mm-hmm. not to go beyond 48, to be safe.
Yes, absolutely. I agree with that. It's certainly a way of kick-starting it. And you can measure whether you've got into ketosis. There's three simple ways to measure it. Mm-hmm. But the cheapest and most efficient or simplest way is to use ketone sticks, which you can buy. Which basically you wee on them.
Yeah.
And the stick will change into a pink colour if you're excreting ketones. There's three different sorts of ketones. One's mm-hmm. measured in the urine, mm-hmm. And one's measured in the blood, and one's measured through the breath.
Saliva.
Through the breath. Ketonic breath test, and that ketone is called acetone, which is sometimes why people have that fruity smell if they go into... Yeah.
Which is not good if you're
that's
diabetic.
That's not good because you go into a ketoacidosis. Dosis, and I just want to say there that it's important
to differentiate between
nutritional ketosis and ketoacidosis.
Ketoacidosis
is a potentially dangerous problem. Yes. Whereas nutritional ketosis is safe, and it's just an alternative way of creating energy.
Yeah. So, and the last point is when you're doing nutritional ketosis mm-hmm. to achieve fat loss, and when you use ketone sticks, I think, Alison, in one of my previous conversations, you told me that it doesn't matter how dark or how much ketones is thrown out of the
That's
kidneys.
Correct.
As long as there is production of ketone, you can be sure that actually
you're
are on the
fat.
Right. Okay, so we are coming to the end of this very fascinating conversation about fat loss. And so to summarize, Alison, it is to use capsicum green tea extract.
Folic acid.
Which is from rosemary, to do high intensity, short interval exercises and super slow exercise mm-hmm. with very minimal weights or no weights. And then to start your ketogenic diet or nutritional plan by fasting to kickstart the ketone production. So these are the key things to remember.
Two
is there anything else?
D3.
Yes.
And the omega-3.
And omega-3.
Those two are absolutely essential. Every person who is obese will have a D3 deficiency.
Wow.
So they are absolutely essential for health. And the important thing to remember is people think that they're going to be healthy if they lose weight or fat. But actually, you have to be healthy
to lose
the fat. So that's the different sort of approach. You have to look at making your body healthy by changing your approach to your diet and increasing these or including these supplements to maintain a health which will then allow you to normalize your hormones and your fat and lose the fat.
Fantastic. I could be talking to you for hours about this. Unfortunately, we are coming to the end of this episode. So the key message is you need to be healthy to lose fat. And this is a healthy way to be healthy and also to lose fat.
UK Health Radio. The station that makes you feel good. UK Health Radio. The station that makes you feel good. We'll be right back.